G'day, I'm obviously Tim Lupke. I provide the technical support and data quality control for the Kyperum Ausflux tower. With me at the University of Adelaide, there's Wayne Meyer, David Chitterborough, and locally, Peter Cale and Grant Whiteman also provide a lot of assistance for this project. And then also we've had a lot of help from the wider Ausflux community, especially me, being a fledgling in the field, Monash University and the CSIRO team at Canberra have sort of picked me up and make me look like I'm a professional. So Ausflux is an ecosystem research network across Australia and New Zealand, and it's a small part of a larger global network called FluxNet. The purpose of it is to better understand the exchanges of carbon, water vapour and energy between the ecosystems and the atmosphere. This is the aim of this is to better validate the different ecosystem models as well as climate models, as well as to give us a better understanding of the real CO2 concentration in the atmosphere. So this is just a handful of these sites around Australia. There are some more in North Queensland and around Perth coming up, and also Tasmania. The data on here, which was produced by Peter Isaac, who's helped me out a hell of a lot, shows the average daily fluxes of both the energy up the top and the carbon. So basically, as the sun comes up, energy comes in, photosynthesis takes off, and carbon gets pulled into the environment. Probably the most interesting thing here is a lot of these different sites, you can see that the patterns aren't similar at all. And Kyperum is again very different. And it's the only one that we've got so far within this 200 and 300 precipitation band. So that is probably the first answer to why Kyperum. It is a unique site. Mallee Woodland also are an important ecosystem across much of southern Australia, up into southern New South Wales as well. But locally, there are a lot of iconic sites around the Riverland that are home to a lot of, many endangered and nationally threatened species. So better understanding these ecosystems will be paramount to any conservation effort. We've also found that the local staff and volunteer support have really been beneficial. And then there's also a strong research history there, so there's a lot of data that we can also use in relation to our work. From the FluxNet global community, this site's also very important to assist with the global modelling to increase the coverage. This graph by Kramer et al. Has precipitation against temperature. And you can see that most of the flux towers, which are the black spots, sort of centre around the 10 degrees and 1,000 millimetre precipitation, but a lot of the more arid, warmer areas have been left out. So if Kyperum was put on this map, it would be right there. So it would be helpful for validating these models. Okay, well, the methodology is called eddy correlation. Basically, as an air mass moves over an environment, the roughness of the surface causes eddies to spiral around. They're all different sizes and means the air mass is quite dynamic. So trying to work out the exchange of the carbon and water vapour becomes very, very difficult. So you have to derive a method to accurately measure the direction of these eddies. So what we use is a 3D sonic anemometer, this thing here, which can monitor the direction and speed of the wind in three dimensions. And alongside that, as close as we can get it without actually interfering with it, we've got a infrared gas analyzer, an Erger, to collect data on the chemical composition. As well as this, we also have a standard MET meteorological station and solar energy monitoring alongside. So our tower is actually situated 25 k's northwest of Renmark, about just in the lower section of Kyperum Station. It's been operational now for just over 14 months. It's collecting data over the undulating, semi-arid mallee area of Cowperham that's now in the state of recovery from previous grazing. It's about 16 years, I think, that it was destocked. And the dominant vegetation in the area is the mallee eucalypt as well as the spinifex grass. The tower is a 20-metre tower. And off to the west, we've got the flux equipment, where the where it can catch the prevailing winds without getting interfered with by the tower itself. To the east, we've got the solar energy equipment. The large white unit up there is a net radiometer, so it collects both shortwave and longwave radiation information. Both above and below, so it can look at it can work out the net energy balance coming in and leaving the environment. And the little unit alongside it also picks up shortwave radiation, and it's become pretty important for a reason I'll show a little bit later on. At the 10 meter and 2 meter points, we've also got just a cup and vane wind sentries to help with working out with the sonic anemometer. We work out a wind profile along the tower. And we've also got a temperature and humidity probe down at the 2 meter mark. And as far away as we can get from the tower, we've got a rain bucket. So at the base of the tower, we've got our enclosure. As you can tell, I'm not a tech. It's a real mess. but it works, so can't complain too much. So that we've got a modem, and that's where we do most of our communication with the data logger remotely at Adelaide. We get the slow average data downloaded every 8 hours to Adelaide. Obviously, that's our data logger underneath all that wire. We've also got a regulator which controls the energy coming in from the solar panels down to the battery and then to the fuse box and out to the equipment. And then we've got a really nice battery that's 185 amp hour sealed gel cell, so it's low maintenance and a lot of energy, so we never go flat. As I said, with the flux, as the fluxes are very difficult to calculate, you need to do it quickly. They can be very small, so we collect data from the flux equipment at 10 times a second. And alongside that, our MET data we collect at every 15 seconds. That data stream we call our fast data, and we can't download that remotely simply because it's too big. I tried once to download it when we couldn't get to the site, and I managed to get about 4 hours worth, and it cost us a lot of money in download. So that was a very silly mistake. But luckily, the data logger does a lot of work for us and produces calculated half-hour averages, and that's what we download on an 8-hour basis. So some of our data. So the red line in this one represents what energy, the potential total energy that could come in at that latitude. But as you can see, it doesn't often reach that. Reason being, largely clouds. If you look at this first week in April, it was quite nice. And looking at the actual daily values, you get these nice curves of the energy coming in, and you can actually see a minor slope of that as well. But the next week, it was all overcast, so I think it looks cool. Here you can see the change over time. You can also see the same shape in the soil temperature. We don't have a great deal of soil probes yet. That's part of our ongoing progression with the site. But where the site, the ambient temperature can get down below zero and close to 50, you can see why a lot of the animals out there burrow. It seems to be nicer to stay underground. And, as I'm sure you all knew, we had a great spring and summer with the rains. So we've collected, it was, it's very wet. Over February, this section here was actually so wet we couldn't make it out there. It's not something you expect to be a problem in the middle of summer at a semi-arid site, than not being able to drive out there. But again, that's where it was really helpful to have such a strong team at the Cowperham station themselves. They were able to get out to the site and changed the data card, so the fast data stream that we couldn't get to, they got to sooner, and managed to save more of our data. So yeah, this is from the Erger and the Flux data at the moment. So the top one is more or less the half hour values of the ambient CO2 levels. And thing, I actually just chucked this in first thing, well, on my way out of the office today, because I like this one. But looking at these, and there's a couple others that are a bit higher, you can see like it was an hour or two where you get this much, much higher value. So obviously somebody has been doing a burn off close by, and we're able to pick that up. So looks cool. This bottom one, I've collected data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration with the global CO2 levels. So they've got their average for the month and then the long-term trend. You can see Calprom over top of that. It fluctuates a lot. So having better global coverage of the CO2 levels is going to become more and more important as we pay more attention to our CO2 levels, as you can see, because one side alone can change quite a lot. This is to do with the daily carbon accumulation. I was going to try to tie it in with yours because you're talking about how this year with the growth and all that. Because you can see that after the rains and into autumn, the productivity, this is grams per square meter, so the amount of carbon that was coming into the environment, it's become more productive. The site is building up more biomass. But before the rains, and down in November, it actually became a source of carbon. It was drying out, it was releasing more carbon than it was collecting. But since the rain, it's wonderful being out there. Very green, lots of wildflowers at the moment. And this is pretty much the same data, but just shown in a different way. This time it's more to do with the totals. So November, again, where it was the source, you can see that you got the slight sink here, but then it's been collecting lots of carbon ever since. And for the first year, it was about here. It was just under 600 grams per square meter that the site's collected. Now we're up over 700 grams. Doesn't sound like it a lot, but this is for each square meter for a fairly arid site. It's pretty impressive. These are my favorite graphs. I got into this in my previous job, but basically it's the wind direction frequency graphs. The further it is away from the center point, the more often the wind comes from that direction. So when you're looking at the average accumulation per day for a month, tying it with a month, the frequency, you can say, well, then you're actually analyzing this area from the tower itself predominantly for that month, where it might be different next time around. So when you're doing your ecological studies, this data, knowing this will be important to tie in with being specific to what area you're actually monitoring. One thing too, here, August last year and August this year, the wind patterns don't necessarily stay the same for each year, for the seasons. And also, for the 2 meter one, the orangey one, it misses out this year. And this next slide, you get same thing. So September last year and September this year, they don't match up. And you also miss out here. Didn't take me very long to work out that's because there's a tree down there. It's about a 3 meter tall tree, so it's interfering with the 2 meter wind path, but not the 10 meter and the 20 meter. So something to be aware of when we're actually trying to work out a profile. So yeah, we're online as well at colpromchala.wordpress.com. It has a lot of the information that I've spoken here and probably a little bit more coherent. And also the publications link here has referenced a lot of the studies that have been done out there. So it's very beneficial for just the resource base with that as well. The last one is our site data, and this might be more interesting, especially to the general public, that every 8 hours we download the data, it instantly gets updated on here. So if you go to this page, you'll have up-to-date data for the last week of the site, so locally. So you've got that the picture there, and then underneath you've got a link that says more detailed data. if you click the picture, it will just expand the picture and you'll get this. So the top graphs, these are wind rises, so they give you information about the direction of the wind as well as the wind speed. And we've got temperature and your rain. So if your storm comes through, you think, oh, I wonder how much rain came through. Ooh, good, better be on here within half a day or so. And then we've got the solid energy influxes. And this is your pressure and relative humidity over top of each other. But where I said that before that the little shortwave radiation sensor was, it's been a lifesaver. For some reason, the net radiometer shortwave down doesn't like it when it's cloudy. It just drops out. So all these red marks are where it's working, but the grey is only the little unit. So we may have actually lost a lot of data if I hadn't accidentally bought that probe as well. But, well, I like to say that I meant to do it. If you click the more detailed data, you get this one. So it's got these to do with your fluxes. There's more MET data and then our diagnostics. But in that graph that I had before with the sites around Australia, it had this in relation to this one. So this is your carbon uptake. So you can see at night, the site's just respiring. And then in the daytime, it's taking in the carbon as photosynthesis takes off. But sometimes you get where it gets a bit noisy. And at the same time, generally, the red one of the absolute humidity will drop out as well. And they're in relation to this diagnostic down the bottom, which is telling us that the ergo, for some reason, the path of the infrared scanner is being clouded, generally to do with rain or condensation. So, yeah, it can get a bit noisy. It's not as bad for our site, so it being generally dry, except for this last spring and summer. But there's sites like in Tasmania and Otway. They get a lot of problems with the sensor not working properly, and they've had to come up with different, like closing the system and drying out the air before they actually test it. But we do get that occasionally as well. Ausflux have their own site as well, which have a lot more information about the broader community. The different monitoring sites has a lot of stats on that too. So they're at ausflux.org.au. And they've also got meetings, which has the PDFs of a lot of the presentations that different members have done for the workshops that we've had over the years. So there's a lot of information on there, lots of graphs, lots of pictures, and yeah, really interesting stuff on there as well. So what next? I mentioned that we didn't have a great deal of soil probes. Well, luckily for me, I get to go out and dig out a few holes and throw in some soon, December at this point. So we're hoping to get a profile down to 1.8 metres of there. Both these will measure the moisture and temperature in the soil. As well as that, there will also be two campaigns, the AusPlots and AusCover campaigns, which, as they start to roll along, as well as the Flux Tower, we'll be able to create what we'll call the Kalprin Chawla supersite. So AusPlots is a replicated surveying technique that they've taken a standardized surveying technique to different plots across Australia and then replicating that over time at low intervals. So in this graph, you've got like these will be the Flux Towers and the network of information. These will collect a lot of information about the vegetation, soil properties, and faunal surveys as well. So, and these hopefully will be aligned with ongoing work within the different states. Standardized approach, so hopefully we can get ongoing data from these areas with change over time. AusCover is represented in this one by the satellite and the aerophotography. So basically, their hope is to create Australian biophysical map products based on remote sensing data time series. And this is validated through really intense ground surveying work in key locations. So they'll be doing their work around our site as well. The bonus with them is their groundwork or their validation work, as well as their biophysical map products will be freely available online. So again, like similar to AusPlots, they We'll also be looking at vegetation structure and the green and brown cover, soil erosion and soil moisture. So, but again, these are from remote sensing data, so more mapping side of things. The three proposed sites for Ausplots in the Capram station, there'll be one right next to the tower, one in the semi-arid woodland, and then one at the floodplain. On the map, they're all situated like that. There's Capram station there. And then you've got Auscover in relation to that. So Auscover, the Ausplot will be is only 1k by 1k. Auscover is 5k squared around there, and then also be a long transect down into the floodplain, right down to the river. So that'll be their surveying work too, both of which should be happening in the next couple of months. So combining this ongoing work with the monitoring with our tower, with the ongoing work of Ausplots and Auscover, we hope to be able to establish a Capram Chowla supersite. The only one that's really on the way at the moment that I know of is up in the Daintree. So, yeah, this is pretty interesting stuff, and it should really develop with ongoing input. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting stuff for us. Thanks.